Welcome back to the Dealmakers Podcast Show with serial entrepreneur Alejandro Cremades, best-selling author of The Art of Startup Fundraising and co-founder at Panthera Advisors. In this podcast, we ask our guests about their successful acquisitions and financing rounds.
All righty. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Dealmaker Show. So today we have a very exciting founder, you know, where we're going to be talking about all types of good stuff that we like to hear, building, scaling, financing. You know, we're also going to be talking about how he went from one side of the table to the other. I mean, what he's doing right now, I mean, he's literally in a rocket ship. They have raised and invested over $500 million in what they're doing and super exciting stuff around culture, team building, how to really scale something in an industry where you have no idea and that you're an outsider. I mean, everything that you can think of. So brace yourself for a very inspiring conversation. And without further ado, let's welcome our guest today, Steve Magami. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Alejandro. Great to be with you.
So originally born in Tehran, but you moved to the U.S., to California, you know, quite early. So give us a walk through memory lane. How was life growing up?
Life was awesome. I moved to California when I was about a year and a half old. My father had been completing his PhD in computer science at USC. Grew up in a humble area within Orange County. Grew up with two brothers in a household that were, you know, we were playing sports, a lot of adrenaline, healthy food, a fruit culture, which is relevant to the conversation today, and really kind of simple upbringing, nothing fancy. And what was interesting, I think, and relevant is with very entrepreneurial parents, very open-minded parents. My father went from working at IBM to starting his own software company and grew up in a house with an entrepreneurial kind of a vibe in the house and pretty normal otherwise.
Now, in your case, I mean, you were into sports and you ended up even playing competitive tennis. How do you think that competitive spirit, you know, has shaped you up, you know, especially now being an entrepreneur?
Well, I like to win. I've always liked to win. I had a blast playing competitive tennis growing up. Obviously, growing up in California, Southern California is quite helpful in terms of weather and in terms of the competitive landscape out here. And so had a blast. I learned kind of the value of the work you put in, the reps you get and what you get out. You know, and you know, I think took many lessons from that.
How does someone that study biology in the University there of Santa Barbara, you know, gets into business? That's quite a, you know, interesting transition there.
So graduating in the late 90s at a time when the internet heyday was upon us, was materializing as we approached the late 90s, certainly was an exciting and dynamic time. And I was fortunate to be surrounded by enough people to get drawn into venture capital really while I was still in college as an intern and dipping my toe in the water and getting my feet wet a little bit and seeing what was out there in terms of tech and growth and startups really drew me away from where I was heading, which was med school. And I ended up in private equity out of college and learned business really kind of on a fast track from some brilliant bosses and colleagues, and was blessed to work with a really strong team and a supportive environment that helped me kind of come up the curve quickly.
And what about there? I mean, during the years where you were doing the internships in VC, being involved in private equity too, I mean, you were part of the spinoff there of Lovells, which was the investment bank that you became a principal quite young there. I guess when it comes to private equity and to being on the other side of the table, being an investor, I'm sure that you learn a thing or two when it comes to pattern recognition and to seeing, you know, the good from the bad, from the ugly. So what were some of those things that you learned during the days of being an investor?
So talent, the importance of talent was one. I would say due diligence was another. You know, identifying value and going very deep to understanding the risk-adjusted potential that would exist. Going very deep on diligencing not only industries and markets, but market opportunities, products, services, and ultimately the difference between kind of, from our experience, the difference between winners and losers were really a combination of those things. the right talent, the right diligence, the right risk management, amongst other things.
Now, in your case, you know, after the Lovell's chapter, you actually even did one deal of your own, you know, where you helped with structuring things up, and that company ended up selling for $1 billion+ valuation. So I guess when it came to the deal-making side and being more active and taking more of a lead role when it comes to that deal side of things, what was that journey like? What was that experience for you in seeing something, you know, at the beginning and then seeing something, you know, more mature and selling for such a hefty price?
Well, I definitely saw the, you know, dynamic moments in the market. We definitely saw during the heyday of renewable energy, you know, where valuations went. And we definitely saw, you know, the rise, and we definitely saw the what happened after 2008 with that industry. We saw, though, that one of the things that I saw and I learned, you know, from those experiences really was around the tangible value of building a business that has a real sustainable value to provide to the world. And so that was a very interesting experience. And I think I took a lot of lessons from the dangers, though, of market cycles and the dangers of capital requirements.
Now, for you, I mean, you ended up going at it, you know, with AgroVision, which is the your baby, right? You know, and we're going to be talking about that. But one thing that is really incredible that I like to touch on, you know, because obviously I'm an immigrant, and, you know, and I feel very compelled with other stories of immigrants, is the impact that your father had in you, right? Because you guys came here to the U.S., you know, to build a better future, a better tomorrow, you know, that your parents wanted to have for you guys, for you and your brothers. And also your father was an entrepreneur himself. So I guess, did you know early on that you were going to go at it and start your own company eventually? Or what did you learn from that experience and seeing your dad going through the cycles too?
No, definitely didn't know. I felt I had something, I felt the spirit within me, but definitely came from a culture where you were guided to be a doctor, a lawyer. You know, you were guided towards certainty and stability, and certainly certainly saw the challenges of entrepreneurship firsthand from my father. But I also saw the excitement, the exciting parts of that. And so, you know, it was absolutely one of those stories where we lost everything. My father lost, you know, all of his family's kind of, you know, wealth was lost in the revolution. He came here with nothing, had to rebuild. We grew up with a mentality that, you know, the world is, we have a new opportunity here. This is an incredible country. We saw the American dream. We dreamed that a little bit. And I think I dreamed that a lot as a kid, and saw the struggles of my parents having come here to an entirely new country, an entirely new place without family, without friends. And I saw their struggles, and I, you know, that certainly left an impact on me. And I think that certainly who I am today is kind of the fabric was woven from those early years to a great extent.
So at what point then do you realize, hey, I think it's my time. My time has come to go at it, because obviously that ended up coming with AgroVision. But how did the whole idea of AgroVision come to you in that moment where you're like, let's go?
Yeah. The life journey and the life graph is really interesting. So there's a point where I put the MCAT books down as I'm graduating UC Santa Barbara with a major in biological sciences. And I decide, you know what, I'm going to go for it. I'm going to go into business. And I was fortunate to land in private equity shortly after graduating at a very good firm at Putnam Lovell and working for an incredible boss in Jeff Lovell. There was another moment where I saw the opportunity with AgroVision that, you know, there was an opportunity, a small window I saw, you know, in renewable energy, but the largest one I ever saw was with AgroVision, was the opportunity to truly transform the consumer experience with superfruit in a way that would not require the consumer to want to buy fruit for health, but to actually want to buy superfruit and fruit for snacking, for enjoyment, pure enjoyment and pure snacking. And that was by far my largest aha moment in my career.
So then talk to us about AgroVision then. You know, like how does AgroVision come together and what ended up becoming the business model?
Yeah. Well, we saw this. We saw that this was a growth. This was a growth opportunity. What I mean by that is, we saw the what we call the berry roulette, the purchase at the shelf of blueberries or berries was such a spotty experience. There was such a frequent dissatisfaction with the product. You wouldn't want to go back and buy more, and that is statistically what we found was happening. Consumers did not go back and buy more. And that was happening with other produce products as well. And so when we saw the opportunity to take really unique, particular microclimates globally, plant and produce very particular varietals, and apply a lot of tech and a lot of operational excellence and business systems, and integrate that into to carrying a certain quality all the way to controlling that quality, creating a quality and controlling it all the way to the consumer and putting that quality on the shelf, that was a different product. If you've ever had, if you've ever had golden kiwis, Alejandro, I don't know if you've had them, you probably don't want to have green kiwis anymore if you can have a golden kiwi. That was exactly the experience we saw with berries, that if we could create a whole new level of eating experience using this entire chain that I just described and this entire stack of tech, we thought, wow, what we could do in terms of health in the world and what we could do in terms of transforming that consumer experience year round would be incredible, particularly if we could do it every week of the year and not on a seasonal basis. And that is really the definition of kind of the platform we've built in AgroVision.
Hey guys, so pardon the interruption here. So I got to tell you that, you know, for those of you that are either looking to raise money or you're looking to get your company acquired, you don't have to be alone. You know, there's a lot of psychology that needs to be blended with strategy, with methodology, with process. And it's very hard. And already doing your business alone is super, super difficult. So I remember, you know, back then when I was an entrepreneur, I kept really experiencing the challenge of either knowing or finding the right type of access to the right type of investors, or really understanding what was the right type of guidance, you know, that would carry me through the process, whether it was with seeking money or with going through the acquisition. So that gap that I found being an entrepreneur is ultimately what pushed me later on when I met my co-founder at Pantera, Mike Severson, to really put together an advisory firm where we are guiding entrepreneurs and founding teams through the capital raising efforts, whether you are at a seed stage or at a Series A stage, or if you are going through the process of an acquisition and you are in small to mid-cap type of cycle. So again, you know, we would help you from guiding you and supporting you from A to C all the way to the end as an extension of your team. And there's no reason for you to do this alone. So with that being said, if you would like to find out more, feel free to send me an email at alejandro@panteraadvisors.com, and we would love to take a look at helping you out.
What do you think were the, I mean, obviously here you are, you know, executing, you know, at the beginning on an industry that you were an outsider. What do you think were the biggest hurdles that you had to overcome, and what kind of difficulty are we talking about?
Enormous hurdles. So, well, first of all, to get to where we are, we've raised and invested over $500 million. But I would say just as difficult as that, coming as an outsider into an industry where no one believed we were going to be disrupting this industry, right? This is an industry where it's an insider's industry, right? Produce I'm talking about, and agriculture. But it had to be a business that was built globally with operations around the world. So startups are hard enough as they are. Raising huge amounts of capital, that's hard enough as it is. But to then have to do that on the basis, and only on the basis, of having to have, by design, a particular geographic footprint globally that was required to be successful and to attract the talent and to develop the, you know, the centers of excellence and to transmit and transfer those centers of excellence at a speed to allow us to pull this all together was difficult.
So what was the most difficult part of, let's say, you know, something like this, as you were saying, very capital intensive, but let's say on the teams, on having teams, you know, in many locations, you know, how do you go about that? Because obviously the culture piece there is a big one, you know, because every location has its own culture, so to speak. So tell us about that too.
So attracting the talent for building this business in this industry, in the geographies we built it, incredibly difficult. It took us years to build up the talent to where we were really ready to scale. And so if you look at the last, you know, we're a little more than 10 years old, but if you look at the last 10 years, our growth has been just exponential in the last 4 to 10 years. And the reason for that is because those first 6 years were extremely difficult. And getting the building the platform, building the flywheel, building the talent, and creating that DNA throughout the whole organization that was required to truly scale at this pace, very difficult. And bringing a combination, the perfect complementary combination of talent from inside and from outside, not only executives and leaders, but talent on the front lines, in some cases, were as important as the leadership talent. And pulling that all together in a way that, in a way that was needed with as diverse a footprint geographically, globally, as was needed was, I think, compounded the challenge.
What about the raising itself? Because, I mean, raising $500 million is quite a lot of money. So, and not easy. So how has it been to going through the different motions and the financing cycles in order to raise all that capital?
Difficult. Investors were, you know, I have friends who were, you know, running funds at large in investment firms, some of the most prominent investment firms in the world, that we've been friends now for 5 or 6 years. And we laugh because they passed up an opportunity to invest 6 years ago. They passed up another opportunity to invest 3 years ago. They passed up another opportunity to invest a year ago. And they have just, you know, seen the rocket ship that we've been building and the truly kind of impactful and disruptive, positively and disruptive business. So it has been a challenge to build the faith in investors who, again, were only used to seeing insiders build companies this successful within this industry. And there's a couple great examples of really old world industries where just outsiders came in with that outsider's mindset and really built something with a lot of capital. But I was fortunate to start with some visionary investors, partners, co-founders that, you know, as we built this, we were able to bring in other visionary investors and other visionary investors at each point in the chain. And fortunately now it's with where we are now, I think we're in a totally different world where we have reached a place where we're finally, even though the markets are very difficult, we're finally in a completely different world of access to capital.
So what was that moment for you guys where you realized that you were into something, where you were seeing the light at the end of the tunnel here?
The light at the end of the tunnel for us really, really was clear when we saw the consumer reaction to our product, the consumer's reaction globally to our product. And when we saw that, when we saw the youth preferring our snacking on our product and our superfruit over, you know, unhealthy snacking or over other snacks for, you know, again, for that youth, those youth ages. And I can tell you from the standpoint of whether it's my children or other consumers' children who have sent us to their kind of experiences, we're talking about 1-year-olds, 5-year-olds, 10-year-olds, 15-year-olds, the spectrum of youth that have all kind of found this product to be incredible. I'm talking now about our real proof of concept, our real first product that where we proved the concept, which is blueberries and our premium blueberries and our premium jumbo blueberries. And Alejandro, I hope you've been able to enjoy those. But we have seen, when we saw that reaction, we put our product on the table next to a traditional snack, and we saw them have one and then two, and then they took the clamshell and walked away and left the bag of chips or the chocolate or the other snack on the table, the light went on. This is $100 billion industry, the snacking industry. And the amount of health impact we could make in the world to transition consumers to healthier snacking, that was truly, you know, a light bulb moment.
I think that timing is everything. You know, when you're building a company and being at the right time in history is really what makes the difference too, no? When you're a founder, I guess, how do you think has impacted you the whole consciousness, you know, around the eating healthy and the, I mean, it's quite different, you know, from maybe like years ago that it was all about fast food and people didn't care. I mean, now people are really conscious about what they put into their body.
Absolutely. We have greater health awareness today, and it's certainly leading to increased, you know, penetration of our products and growth and consumption of our products. We have consumer tailwinds in terms of consumption potential, rising middle classes. It's not just, you know, the traditional history of population growth and health, but there's a whole different wave taking hold today. You see now some of the hottest beverages, some of the hottest sodas are probiotic sodas now. We see the non-alcoholic, you know, alcohol industry, you know, has taken off. And so today we're seeing consumers playing a whole different kind of, you know, playing in a whole different way with their wallet. And we the wallet share we see going towards these healthy products that are truly enjoyable is it feels limitless.
So as we're thinking about feeling limitless, let me ask you something. Let's say you were to go to sleep tonight and you wake up in a limitless world where the vision of AgroVision is fully realized. What does that world look like?
Yeah. I love to dream around this. I mean, we have just not even scratched the surface of where we think we can take the population of the world, let's say, you know, that is transitioning to healthier consumption, healthier eating, and transitioning those consumers to enjoyable, better tasting, truly enjoyable eating experience, superfruit. And that means transforming the consumer experience, Alejandro, across the produce aisle. Imagine if a consumer could walk into a store and be excited to go, more excited to go into the produce section than any other section by far. I think that's the potential. And I think the limitless scenario for us is for us to play, you know, one of the leading roles in that transformation.
So as we're thinking about the past, I want to do it too with a lens of reflection, because I mean, now you guys have had the chance to push this for 12 years, you know, 12 years in the corporate world is like 100 years, right? I mean, 12 years is a long time, right? Pushing a startup. So I guess as you are looking back now and let's say I was able to bring you back in time to that moment, maybe to 2012, you know, that year where you were thinking about a world where you could build something of your own. And let's say you were able to show up right there with your younger self and being able to give that younger self one piece of advice before launching a business. What would that be and why, given what you know now?
Yeah, I would tell my younger self, you have an incredible co-founder. You have an incredible group of co-founders in, you know, Tom Snyder and your co-founder, and in Mark Aaron and Kerry Asil, your two investment co-founders. You guys have incredible potential, given your backgrounds, how complementary you are, and how committed you are to this vision. No pun intended with the name, but truly, with your commitment, as long as you stay the course, what is grounded in that market opportunity and the value you're bringing the world, you will be successful. And, you know, continue to expand with like-minded, you know, partners, investors, talent. I would say that be comfortable being bold, because we were bold, but it was not always comfortable. It was nerve-wracking. It took a lot of courage. I would tell my younger self, when you see talent, don't hesitate for 2 seconds. Talent is what it's all about. And talent is not easy to attract, but do what it takes to attract the talent and don't let it go. And, you know, I think that my younger self would have been, you know, as a startup founder, you're stretching every dollar. I would have said to my younger self, you know what, make exceptions sooner and faster when the right talent comes. because waiting an extra year for that right talent, it's going to cost you a lot more, and the returns are going to be exponential if you get that talent earlier on. So those are, I think, some of the top of mind points I would make to my younger self. And then lastly, I would say, enjoy the journey more. It's, you know, because I was working 90 hours a week, Alejandro. And, you know, I would say that, you know, try to bring more balance to, you know, when I had time with my family, try to be present more. Because it's hard. It's really hard as a startup founder, but it can be done. And it will make you more disciplined. I learned that later on, but I would have loved to have learned that sooner.
I love that. So, Steve, for the people that are listening that would love to reach out and say hi, what is the best way for them to do so?
Reach out to me on, send me a message on LinkedIn, and happy to share more.
Amazing. Well, hey, Steve, thank you so much for being on the Dealmaker Show today. It has been an honor to have you with us.
My pleasure, Alejandro. Thanks so much.
If you like the show, make sure that you hit that subscribe button. If you could leave a review as well, that would be fantastic. And if you got any value, either from this episode or from the show itself, share it with a friend. Perhaps they also appreciate it. So also remember that if you need any help, whether it is with your fundraising efforts or with selling your business, you can reach me at alejandro@pantheraadvisors.com.
You've reached the end of another episode of the Dealmakers Podcast. For free resources and materials, head over to alejandrocremades.com. Thank you for listening, and see you at the next episode.